Morning. How you guys doing? Welcome. My name's Jack. I'm one of the pastors here, and we are so glad you joined us, especially if it's your first time here. We know that going to church anywhere for the first time can be a little scary, and church people can be a little scary, and if we are, I apologize. But I think we got a pretty good bunch here, actually. So as you can tell, I did get a haircut. You know, when I go to get a haircut, it's one of the few times that I'm tempted to lie about my profession. Riding on airplanes is the other time. Because on an airplane, if I tell someone I'm a pastor, that pretty much shuts down the conversation. Unless they're a follower of Jesus, then they want to tell me all about their church and ask me hard questions. And getting your haircuts the same way, the danger in that is people will give you a what they think is a pastor haircut. And I even told her, don't give me a pastor haircut, whatever that means to you. But this gal, I hadn't had her before, but she actually goes to a church in Greeley, and she wanted to tell me all about it and ask a bunch of theological questions. And so she kept asking questions, and she kept cutting and asking questions and cutting. And I just, until I answered her questions, she wouldn't stop cutting. And here we are. So, but it always grows back, and it was a good conversation. Well, we are going to wrap up a series we've been in. We've been looking at the highlights of 1 Peter, and kind of a common theme in 1 Peter is that this world is not your home. You're just visiting. You are headed to another place, a different destination. And in light of that, you should be different. You should stand out. There should be some things about you that are different. And so we've been looking at some of these different things. And today I want to look at kind of an unpopular topic. Pretty unpopular. It was a promise made by Jesus to us, about us. But before I get into this unpopular promise, I want to look at some things that Jesus did not promise, just to make sure we're on the same page. Jesus never promised us that we'd be wealthy. Did you know that? He never promised us that it would never rain on your vacation. He never promised that, you know, your toilet would never back up. He never promised that your car wouldn't break down. He never made these kinds of promises. He never promised that your water wouldn't be shut off when you come back from sabbatical, which is what happened to us. It was one of the few bills that it was still an old paper bill from the town of Windsor. I had it set it up, and I thought I had covered everything, and we came back from sabbatical after traveling all day, flying from the West Coast, and there was this big bright hanger on our door, and I thought, hey, Wendy, somebody left us a little thank you. They're welcoming us home, you know. And we get up there, and it says your water's been shut off. But I had the time, and it was like 30 minutes before. And it's a Thursday night, and I'm thinking, what's it going to take to get the water back on? I mean, how long is it going to take? I mean, are they going to drag this out all weekend? And the first thing you kind of notice is that you get one flush. And you need to be really strategic about that. And the guy that brought us back from the airport used one of the flushes. So I was already thinking about, like, what are we going to do? And Wendy was just in straight panic mode. I mean, you know, all you want to do after a flight like that is take a shower and relax, and can't do any of that. And you're kind of thinking, come on, God, you know, we were on sabbatical, and we have to come home to this, the water shut off. But life happens, doesn't it? And God never promised us, Jesus never promised us that everything was going to be great. In fact, he did promise us that if you're a faithful follower of Jesus, if you're set apart, if you're nonconforming, if you're standing up and speaking up for those who can't, you're going to face opposition. And he uses some really strong language. In fact, this is what he says. He says that you will sometimes be hated because of me. You'll be hated and you'll be persecuted because of me. Kind of paraphrasing John 15, verses 18 and 20. He said, if the world hates you, keep in mind it hated me first. If they persecuted me, he says, they will persecute you also. And that's what you signed up for. And sometimes we don't like to hear that. I mean, this today is going to be the most encouraging message you never wanted to hear. Believe me. But let me tell you this. We're going to get to Advent stuff in a few weeks, and it's going to be hope and love and peace and all the good stuff. But we got to get through some challenging stuff this morning. So I've titled the message, Under Fire. When you're under fire, when you're under it, when you're being persecuted because of your faith. Now remember the context of 1 Peter. He's writing to a group of followers of Jesus who are under Nero. And this guy is just twisted. This guy is a Roman leader who's just terrible. And many would argue that during this time was when church came under the most persecution in history. But you could make an argument that there's still a lot of that going on today. And that maybe even today we're under some of the most persecution. If you live in an Islamic country, little has changed from the time that Jesus was there. In the United States, you know, it's persecution, but it's not like a lot of our brothers and sisters across the planet are facing. But I did read some statistics that I'd like to share with you. I read that in an average month, over 300 Christians are killed for following Jesus. In an average month, over 200 churches are burned or completely destroyed. In an average 30-day period, there's upwards of 800 followers of Jesus who are tortured, raped, imprisoned for their faith, beaten. Now, we don't experience a lot of that, but our persecution does come, and it comes in subtle ways in the U.S. Maybe you don't get the promotion because you're a follower of Jesus. Maybe you're kind of the butt of the jokes at the office. You know, maybe you don't get invited to the party because they know you're a follower of Jesus. And all of this is persecution. And Jesus said, if you follow me, sometimes the world will hate you and you will be persecuted. You will come under fire. And then Peter says in verse 12, he says, dear friends, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised at the fiery trials you're going through, as if something strange were happening to you. He's like, this is normal. This is what it's all about. This is not strange. You're not doing anything wrong. This is how it's supposed to be at times. And he's telling people who are hurting, and I know many of you are hurting today and you're going through stuff, to not be shocked, to not be surprised. If you're living boldly for Jesus, you'll face opposition. If you're living different, if you're set apart, you'll face opposition. So he says, don't be shocked. Don't be surprised when you're criticized, when you're ridiculed, when you come under fire. Now, if you're here today and you're listening to what I'm saying, you're thinking, you know, that just doesn't describe me. Like, I never take any hits for my faith. Like, nobody ever gives me a hard time. I really don't really get what you're talking about. A great self-evaluation question, maybe a hard question to ask, is why? Why not? Why aren't you facing opposition? Now, if I can just use some football terms for a second. I know a lot of you watch football, play football. You know, if you're playing on the field and I'm sitting on the bench and I'm flipping my water bottle and I'm taking selfies and I'm flirting with a real pretty cheerleader named Wendy and I'm just like in my own world, you know, I'm not even paying attention to the game. Do you think the other team is worried about me at all? Do they care about me? Have they studied film on me? Not at all. They don't give a rip about me. They don't care. I am no threat to them. Now, on the other hand, let's say I'm a really good player. Last week I scored 3 TDs and the other team couldn't stop me. What are they going to do? They're going to study me. They're going to double team me. They're going to say, you need to take that guy out of the game. because he is messing up what we're trying to do. And it's much like this in the spiritual realm and in spiritual things. If you're no threat, then you're not going to face any opposition. And many people live their life like that. Well, I'm part of the Jesus team. They gave me a jersey. I've got a number. I show up to some games, Christmas, Easter, but I'm not really in the game. I'm not really engaged. I'm really not a threat. I like it over here on the bench. This is a nice place for me to be. I'm not praying for any miracles. You know, I'm not intercessory for anybody, any people I know. You know, I'm not really loving my neighbor like Jesus said to do. I'm not helping the poor. I kind of like it. I know I've got talents and gifts and stuff to offer, like if I get in the game, but I'm happy to just let other people, you know, play the game. I never say, can I pray for you right now and just, you know, invite God's kingdom to come in people's lives in the moment. I'm probably not making a whole lot of difference, but they gave me a jersey and I'm part of the team, but I'm not really representing him boldly. And in this example, the enemy takes no notice. He takes no notice of us when we're like this. But the moment you engage, the moment you step onto the field, everything changes. And you will feel that opposition. And some of you are going through it right now. You had a week like this. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Because you're on the field. And you're in the game. And you're standing up. And you're making a difference. I mean, imagine a soldier enlisting, going through basic training, you know, coming to the war, and then coming back to his commanding officer and saying, they're shooting at me. I didn't expect that. What's going on? And the commanding officer says, what did you expect? And so many times, as followers of Jesus, we need to realize that it's not a playground. It's a battleground. What we signed up for is not a playground. It's a battleground, and there will be casualties, and there'll be times when you will be hated because of your faith. There'll be times when it will cost you something. And if it doesn't ever cost you anything, you need to ask the question, why? Why? Ephesians 6:12 says from the New Living Translation, "For we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world." There's a battle going on. There's a battle going on over you. There's a battle going on over your marriage. There's a battle going on over your kids. There's a real battle going on. And he says it's evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly world. Places. And when you engage, you will face opposition. And Peter says, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. This is how it is supposed to be. And I think if he were writing this message today, you know, he would taper it to someone in the Middle East. He'd say, don't be surprised if you lose a loved one because of your faith. You know, don't be surprised if your entire family disowns you and they won't speak to you. Don't be surprised, you know, to the freshman girl at university. Don't be surprised if you don't get asked out on another date when you take a stance of purity, because you'll face opposition. Maybe to you and me, you know, don't be surprised if people make fun of you because you go to church and you give your time and your energy and your resources. And they hear about that and they go, what are you, crazy? What's wrong with you? Don't be surprised if you don't get the promotion because of your faith, or if you don't get invited to the party, or you're not the cool person. Don't be surprised when you come under fire, because you're in the game, you're on the front lines, you're engaged, and you're making a difference. And then he says, verse 12, be very glad. Be very glad. Because these trials make you partners with Christ. People say, you know, I want to feel close to Jesus. I want to be close to Jesus. Well, here's a way. It's not the you know, the way we would think about or the thing we're looking for. But he says, when you're persecuted for your faith, you are partners with Christ. He goes on to say, so that you'll have this wonderful joy of seeing his glory when it's revealed to all the world. This is so counter to our culture. This is so counter to what I want. Because for me, the message usually is to pursue comfort. To pursue comfort at all costs. Not inconvenience, not suffering. I pursue comfort at all costs. I would much rather have a nice, convenient conversation with you than one that's full of confrontation. I don't want that. I'd rather have a nice, easy day than one that's full of pain. Comfort is something that we often pursue at all costs. We even sometimes spiritualize it a little bit, you know? And our prayers sometimes are all about comfort and taking care of me and protecting me. And, you know, I don't want any kind of opposition or conflict. Dodge it at all costs. The path of least resistance. How does this play out today? Well, maybe you're at a party and you don't correct someone after they, you know, make a racist or sexist joke. And you know, I should have said something. But I didn't. Because I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to cause any problems. I don't want any conflict. So we just keep our mouths shut. We don't want to be that guy or that gal that they talk about. And there we are pursuing comfort. And yet Peter paints a very different picture in this book. And he says that when they make fun of you because of Jesus, it's to your credit. It means you're doing something right. You're on the right track. I want to show you a couple of illustrations. I'm calling them life cycle illustrations just to kind of drive this home. So this first one that's on the left, is it your left? Yeah. So pursue comfort, what I've been talking about. Above all else, I got to be happy. Above all else, everything just needs to run smooth. You know, no conflict. Don't rock the boat. Smooth sailing. And because that's our pursuit, we avoid confrontation. We avoid opposition. Don't upset anyone. Don't make anyone mad. Just fly under the radar, right? Fly under the radar. But then what happens is our faith weakens. And we realize, I stand for nothing. I'm not passionate about anything. I don't seem to care about anything. And we've taken ourselves out of the game. And then suddenly life is empty. We feel empty inside. We feel far from God. We feel like we have no purpose and no meaning. And we begin to think, you know, there has to be something more. Because of this void inside, this God-shaped void. And we feel that emptiness. And we feel that lack of purpose. And what do? We pursue comfort. And like some crazy Groundhog Day, the whole thing starts over again. And we find ourselves in this pattern over and over. I think there's another way to live. I think there's a way to live that Peter's trying to tell us about. But let me warn you, it takes courage. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not easy. And the only way you can live this way is first by realizing that you are a foreigner, that you're a sojourner, that this world is not your home, that you're just visiting, that you have a different destination. These are the things, the words that Peter started the book out with. He said, you have to see yourself as an alien of this world. You have a heavenly kingdom, and you serve a king that's not of this world, a spiritual destination. And and what he stands for and calls you to is very different than the world. He teaches you to love when people hate. He teaches you to give even more when they take advantage of you. He teaches you when they ask for your coat to say, hey, here's my shoes and my coat and my everything. What do you need? To go the extra mile. He teaches you that you have to live radically different. He says things like turn the other cheek when you're offended. And if you choose to live that way, it's a totally different life cycle. And it starts by getting up in the morning and saying, I'm going to live boldly for Christ. I'm going to live boldly for my faith, starting right now. When my feet hit the floor, I'm going to live boldly. I'm going to adjust my priorities. I'm going to share my faith with people. I'm going to do what's right, even when it costs me. I'm going to look for people and ask them, can I pray for you right now? I'm going to leverage my time and my talents and my money for things that matter, for kingdom stuff. I'm going to lay down some of my rights and my comfort and my convenience. And when you start that way, I guarantee you'll face opposition. You'll face lots of opposition because now you're in the game. And now they're saying, hey, look out for number seven. Number seven, man, watch out for that one. Put a double team on number seven. Number seven is messing things up for us. Number seven is praying for people. Number seven is like, we don't even want to mess with seven. Actually, do whatever it takes to take her out of the game. Get her out of the game. Hurt her. And that's the opposition that comes. And when you live that way, your faith becomes stronger. And you feel closer to God. And you're in the zone. And you're living on the edge. And you're seeing miracles. And you're seeing the power of the Holy Spirit change lives. And you feel in sync with His Spirit. And now there's an increase. And suddenly life has meaning in Jesus. And you feel like you have purpose. And you realize the things that you were made to do and created to do. And the void is suddenly filled. And His Word becomes alive. You see things in the Bible that you're like, I've been reading that all my life. And now it's alive. It totally means something different and new. And you witness His power. And you see life and people and politics and all of it. By the way, did I say this earlier? Get out and vote. Pray and vote. Pray and vote. And you begin to see all of those kinds of things through a different lens. And you know what you do? You do it again. You live boldly. You live boldly. And it's a great life cycle. And I think it's the life cycle that Peter is calling us to. And a great question for all of us is, which cycle of these two most represents you recently? Has it just been, I got to avoid any kind of persecution? Anything like that, I've got to avoid it. And then he goes on to say in verse 19, so if you're suffering in a manner that pleases God, keep on doing what is right. And trust your lives to God who created you. For He will never, ever fail you. He will never, ever fail you. Sometimes it's going to cost something. It's going to cost you something. But God will use it for good. He'll use it to strengthen you. I got a story I want to share. Some of you have heard this story. I'm telling a story on my son Riker, and he was 16 or 17, and we sent him to Florida with this baseball team, and at first I couldn't make it down, so he flew in early, and then I got to go later, but it was an all-star team of kids around the state, and it was coached by ex-professional baseball players. So these guys haven't really even hung out or met. And they fly to Florida. They're in a van. And they're driving around to find some place to eat dinner. And Riker's sitting in the back of the van. And one of these coaches looks back and says, hey, we're going to go to Hooters for dinner. Does anyone have a problem with that? Now, I don't have anything against Hooters. But in our family, that just wasn't a place that we went and had dinner. And, we felt like kind of how they treat women and press and the dress and things like that just didn't line up with what we were about. So, picture this. The kid's, he's like 16 or 17, and he's in the back of the van, and he says, "Yeah, coach, I have a problem with that." And he told me all 16 of these kids looked back at him. And we're like, "What? What is your deal?" He doesn't even know these guys. "What?" And so he said the coaches had a little powwow. And then one coach took all the other kids to Hooters. And the other coach took Riker to this really nice Italian restaurant. And they sat down at dinner. And the coach said, "Hey, Riker, I want to tell you something. I didn't want to go to Hooters either. But I didn't have the guts to say it. And you did. And I want to thank you. And dinner's on me tonight." And he said the dinner was really expensive. Now, fast forward, they're there all week, and he and a couple of buddies that he had just met are walking around a mall, and there's some guys there just, asking questions and handing out flyers, and they say, "Hey, if you guys died today, do you know where you would go?" And Riker had just made this new friend who was an only child. His dad was a very successful surgeon in Denver. And he said this kid just had all kinds of money. Like, he had like all kinds of cash. He was buying everything and paying for everybody. But he seemed kind of lonely because his parents would just give him money and kind of send him on his way. And they were too busy for him. And this kid looked at those guys and goes, "I don't know where I'd go, but Riker knows." Just based on, the whole other thing. So later on, this kid pulls him aside and he says, "No, really, what's the deal? Like, what happens when I die? How can I know?" And because he was willing to sacrifice a little bit in that moment, he was able a few days later to have this great Jesus conversation with one of his buddies. I think Satan overplays his hand. We're always like, "Man, the church is being persecuted. The church is being persecuted." But every time the church is persecuted, the church grows. Every time. And when you're persecuted and you go through hard stuff and you struggle, your roots go deep. Your faith gets strong. You begin to know who you are and whose you are and what you're about and what your purpose is. And I think Satan overplays his hand when he brings the persecution. Well, I've gotten way off track. Let me find where I'm at here. Oh, this is good. Coming up. So that verse that I read in 19, Peter gives us a little bit of insight, a principle to live by. Can you bring that back up, Nate? That verse 19. Do you see the principle? Let me boil it down for you. What I see here is, do what is right and trust God with the results. Can we say that together? Do what is right. Good, you're listening. Do what is right and trust God with the results. In every arena of life, at work, even if it's going to cost you something, do what is right and trust God with results. In your relationships, do what is right and trust God with the results. In your finances, do what is right and trust God with the results. How you raise your kids, do what is right and trust God with the results. In the face of peer pressure, do what is right and trust God with the results. And what that means is, those of us who are followers of Jesus, we don't cut corners. We don't look for the easy way out. Even Jesus prayed before he went to the cross, "If there's another way out, bring it." I mean, we can pray that. But once the answer is, "No, you need to go through this," then we go through it. And we trust God with the results. There's times when you're going to have to stand up and say, "I'm sorry. I can't do that. I'm sorry, I can't do this job." And it's going to cost you something. But you leave the job. We do what is right, and we trust God with the results. As long as you're suffering for doing something good, keep on doing that. And trust that God will never, ever fail you. But here's the deal. If you are like this world, if you look so much like this world, if you're not set apart in any way, this world will love you as its own. No persecution will come. But when you are just visiting, you look different. You live different. You face opposition. Your relationships and standards are different. You're a different kind of employee. And you're a different kind of boss. You're different. And when persecution comes, it causes us to ask, what do I stand for? What am I about? What do I believe? Well, let's wrap it up. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6. This is how Peter wraps it up. After saying all of these hard things, this is what he says. He says, humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and at the right time, he will lift you up in honor. Meaning you're going to get through this. It's going to be hard for a little while, but he's going to lift you up. And he's going to honor you. Until then, verse 7, give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about you. He's not just sitting over to the side watching you go through what you're going through. He's there with you. And he feels what you feel, and he says, give it to me, because I care about you. Verse 8, stay alert. Watch out, for your great enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Stand firm against him, and be strong in your faith. Remember that your family of believers all over the world is going through the same kinds of suffering you are. The Bible talks about a great cloud of witnesses. And it's like they're cheering us on. We used to sing a song like this, this great cloud of witnesses, and they're cheering us on. Sometimes I think about, and these are the people who've been through the suffering, and now they're with Jesus. Sometimes I think about my grandma, you know, and she's with Jesus, and she's cheering me on. She's like, Jack, I know it's tough. I know you're having a hard week, but trust me, you can make it. You can make it. And it's going to get better. He says, remember, there's lots of people, lots of family of believers that are going through the same kinds of suffering. Verse 10, in his kindness, God called you to share in his eternal glory by means of Christ Jesus. So after you have suffered a little while, that doesn't seem like a little while, does it? When we're in it, I mean, we see people that really suffer their entire lives. But Peter's talking about eternity. This is an eternal, forever perspective. He's saying, look, on the other side of this, when you join that great cloud of witnesses, it's going to seem like a little while when you look back. So after you have suffered a little while, what's going to happen? He will restore you. He will support. He will strengthen you. And he will place you on a firm foundation. All power to him forever. Amen. So I know a lot of you are going through it. And he says, give it to him. Cast your cares on that. Ask for prayer. That's one of the ways we do this, is we ask for prayer. We got a whole prayer area back there, a little banner. We have people back there, real people. And you can go back there and get prayed for. Jeff's going to be back there. He's a real person. And he would love to pray for you, whatever you're going through. You're not an inconvenience. And so in these, you know, while we're worshiping, singing songs, go back there and get some prayer. I think there's another group that needs to go back and get prayer today. And that's the group that, you know what, you haven't faced any opposition in a long time. It's been pretty smooth sailing. You're not in the game. You're on the bench. And we need you in the game. We need number 5 in the game. We need you, because you know what, there's things that you were created to do. among us that really only you were created to do. I mean, God will make up the difference and find somebody else to fill that whatever slot. But he's put gifting and talents and things in you, and you need to be in the game. You need to be in your lane doing what you were created to do. We need you to do that. We need you to not be on the bench. There's another group, and I just got a kind of a picture of first service of people that you're just laying on the sideline. You're just a puddle. Like, you haven't even made it back to the bench. I mean, they took you out so hard that you're just laying in a little puddle. I mean, the ambulance hasn't even come yet. And if that's you today, get prayer. Get prayer for that so you can get healed up. So I'm hoping to see a big old line of people back there. Today will be kind of get prayer day, all right? Let's stand.